Welcome back to the Bowlcast, your AMS2 podcast. I'm Steele. Oz is currently on a hunger strike until the Copa Uno Turbo is released. So with me today is our special guest co-host, Jay Turn from AMS Unofficial. This episode is about multiplayer. What is it? Why do we like it? And as much information we can provide about AMS2's upcoming rating system that's expected at the end of the year, so stick around. But before we get into it, a bit of housekeeping. The Bowlcast is now available on all major podcast platforms, including Spotify. If you prefer that medium, go ahead and look for it there. Also, some exciting news. The Steelcast 27 Thunderbolt Racing Series is being organized as we speak, and the first race is being planned this coming Sunday, September 26th. Jay Turn was a big reason for that. So Jay Turn, Jim, welcome to the podcast.
Wow. Thanks for the introduction. Yes. Thanks, guys.
All right. So as we do with anyone that's new to the podcast, I'm always interested in hearing your origin stories. So, Jim, where did you start sim racing?
Oh, well, some of this might sound a little bit like what Renato said on last week's episode. We're a similar age, myself and Renato, so I started way back on pole position on a BBC B Micro. I think I was only about nine years old at the time. But yeah, captivating. Always liked cars, and the that whole idea and the thought of being able to drive them around on a computer, simulating the real world was where it all started. So way back
That's
in
great.
1980 something, I would guess.
Yeah. So what were your interim steps? I mean, obviously you're involved with Automobilista 2 now. So where were your steps from that? Was it an incremental process? Did you go from pole position straight to AMS1?
Yes.
Or was there something in between?
Until a couple of years ago, I was playing pole position. No, I was pole position, then proper computers, PCs, MicroProse, GP, something that probably many of your listeners are familiar with. I even built a wooden steering wheel from old joystick components to play that.
Really?
Really.
One of those DIY guys, huh?
Proper. It had a bicycle inner tube that acted like a spring return for that active force feedback that we all enjoy. And then for Grumpy Legends, another one that, again, great game, and that was where it really started to sink in about how fabulous the sim racing could be. Then I was getting into my sort of 20s, and other things took over, so there's a big gap. And then I came back with Stock Car Extreme back in about 2015, I guess.
I'm starting to see a pattern here with a lot of people that come on here. You had some previous Razor exposure, apparently.
Yeah, so I watched an Empty Box video, YouTuber quite well known, Empty Box, and he was talking about Stock Car Extreme and Riser and how good it was, and I kind of thought, yeah, I'll back their Indiegogo campaign. So I was lucky enough to make that decision way back 2015, I'm guessing, and backed them to a tune of $100. But that has got me every single iteration of their games, Automobilista, Stock Car Extreme, and obviously AMS2, and all their DLC and everything.
Wow.
So it's turned out to be probably the best $100 I've ever spent. So I'm very happy with that.
So you started with Automobilista 1, and I know that you're involved with AMS Unofficial, which is, for all intents and purposes, a comprehensive Automobilista league that apparently was started back in AMS1 days. So, you know, how did that involvement come about? When did you decide that you wanted to become involved as an organizer or, like an officer?
Well, before AMS Unofficial, I was one of the admins over at Race Department. I used to run the AMS EU community over there for a couple of years. Enjoyed that very much. And that's where I kind of started off my multiplayer racing, I guess, was over at Race Department.
Okay.
And then when I left the race department, I was hunting around for another community to race with and stumbled across AMS Unofficial. They were just setting up at the time. I wasn't lucky enough to be kind of one of the founding drivers or anything like that, but I joined it. I was there for their first season one proper after they stopped doing just casual races. I was there for that first season one. That's kind of where I started with AMS Unofficial, right back at the start. We're now in season 20, or about to start season 22, so we've been going quite a while.
Yeah. So I'm, you know, all of us have played games that require or have a community aspect to it. I guess, you know, you start off as a member and then you work your way up. And I think from my experience from previous games, and this isn't just related to sim racing, it's this happens in all types of games, all genres. And it's like basically whoever wants to do it steps up and does the work, because I know for a fact that, you know, community organizing is a big deal. It's a big time commitment. A lot of effort goes into it. So describe for someone that's never heard of AMS Unofficial. Describe for them what you guys do. Why is it a good league?
Because we're the best.
Yes,
But of
easy.
course, easy question and an excellent. No, more seriously, I guess we try to have fun racing, but with scoring. So there's a, you know, competitive element. It's not just all one-off events. There's championships or seasons, as we call them. But they're geared around the kind of the gentleman driver attitude to on ra to racing. So we have a core group of regulars
Okay.
Who kind of exemplify that standard. You know, contact happens, robbing can be racing in certain series, certainly. Yeah, we try to exemplify that gentleman driver attitude, and we kind of accept that, you know, everybody's got real life going on. I
Right.
love leagues and taken part in many very serious leagues at Race Department and at AMS Unofficial. We do the serious ones as well, but always the problem is I now do shift work as a living. It means that, you know, six race series spread over a couple of months, and I can't race two of them. And so
Right.
we try to allow for that. We allow drop races. So if you can only do five out of six events, then it doesn't
Makes
affect
sense.
your championship or your chances of winning the championship, shouldn't
Right.
say. So yeah, that's kind of the essence, I guess, of AMS Unofficial.
So casual, competitive,
Yeah.
respective of people's time,
Yeah,
right?
that'd be a good way of doing it. Yeah, we all respecting people's
Their real
lives,
life.
real life.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
it's hard to put that into a sentence, but yeah.
Okay, well, that's really cool, man. So this episode of the Boldcast is we're basically going to be going around talking about multiplayer, what it is. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk about this in particular was how multiplayer has kind of evolved, and there's one aspect to it that just never dawned on me, because every time I've sat down in a sim within the past couple of years, you kind of expect multiplayer to work and be there and be great, and you can drive anybody at any time you want. Public lobby's always running. You know, it's the golden years of multiplayer. And but when I've been talking to some guys that you know, that have raced with Grand Prix Legends, for example, you know, multiplayer didn't start off being great. I think from what I've heard is, you know, there were some huge like network problems, and so there had to be like a technological evolution with multiplayer itself just to enable people to have competitive racing on track. Is that your experience? Did you do any multiplayer with Grand Prix Legends or anything like that?
I didn't with Grand Prix Legends, but I did, wouldn't believe it, do multiplayer with MicroProv GP. But it wouldn't be
Oh.
what you and I would call or would imagine or understand multiplayer to be nowadays. You had to run a little program on your computer, and that monitored whether you took shortcuts or cheated, basically. And then you sent off the output from that program at the end of your race. So everybody raced individually against the AI, basically, sent off this output to prove you weren't cheating, and then the finish time was used to establish
Oh,
your
wow.
overall position. So that would be my very first multiplayer, I guess, not the
That's crazy.
traditional viewpoint of it now.
That reminds me of like a turn-based email game that I used to play like a decade ago. Like it was a strategy game where everyone had to email like this long script. That's so funny.
I mean, about the only way you could cheat was if you were meant to do like a if it the series always had different rules, but if you were meant to be a one take series, like you did the race, and if you crashed out, but obviously you could just delete it and do it again. That was the only way you could possibly cheat. You had to be a man of
Cheaters.
your word, as it were, if you were going to do that.
Yeah, and you could put in your own lap times. Like, I just finished a lap at Spa in 1 minute.
Yes, yeah,
And
definitely.
everybody's like, bullshit. anyway, my point being is multiplayer has become part of the landscape of sim racing, almost to the point where it's the primary focus for a lot of people, including myself. It's obviously a big draw. What do you think makes multiplayer so unique? Why, you know, we have single player games. We've always had single player games, but there's that element of multiplayer that's I'm trying to dig and try to figure out what that is. Like, what makes multiplayer more intriguing to people than single player against AI? And do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, well, certainly for me. I mean, it's the desire, like most of us want to be, the reason why we're into sim racing is because we love racing and we'd love to be out there in real cars doing this, but most of us don't have the time or money or skill to be able to do such a thing. I mean, overtaking an AI is just not quite the same as passing that guy you've been clawing back right after a 30, 40, 50 minute race, closing that gap down. And maybe they make a mistake and you're on his tail and you just make the overtake and it works. There's nothing that doesn't get close to AI, excuse me, doing that against a real person. It's definitely much more satisfying than doing it against AI.
Right.
That's the draw for me.
Yeah, and competition. It's that, yeah, that level of one-on-one competition. I can see that. That's obvious, and I think a lot of people take that probably way too seriously in these. But with that, I think comes, you know, the risk and unpredictability also as well. You know, if you think about it, I drive a lot of single-player games, do a lot of AI racing. But, you know, there's a certain point where it's like, okay, the way they behave is sort of predictable. Whereas in the multiplayer context, it really, you have that competition, and you also know that there's someone that's unpredictable ahead of you or behind you, and it makes that experience all the more, I think, intriguing. But you know, we all know that there's a public a public lobby aspect to it. But there's also, like we mentioned before, you're involved with AMSU. There's that league racing, so you have sort of like two different genres of the same element, you know. And there's a lot of people out there that can't get involved in a league, but they just want to jump in and do a 30-minute public lobby race with all the risks involved of having complete strangers around you. What do you think the benefits of having leagues are? You know, like, you know, who was the first person to put together a league and why, do you think?
Well, I think it's kind of almost the natural progression, isn't it? You do the single player, then you jump on the public lobbies, and hopefully you have a few good experiences,
right.
but no doubt you'll get frustrated by the odd fool on track, and that's what I think directs most people to communities or league race organizers, looking for something a bit more serious where hopefully you're not going to get fools on track taking you out.
Right.
So I say it's almost a natural progression, and again, it's that competitive nature. One-off public lobbies are races are great. You win a 10-lap race and you feel quite good. But if you do well in a championship over 3 or 4 months, 6 or 7 races, and come out, you know, with a podium finish, then again, that's much more satisfying.
Yeah, it's more meaningful. Mm. Yeah, I think there's also, like, you know, you got that reputation kind of thing going on too. You know, knowing that people know who you are, and knowing that they're developing a thought in their brain about who you are as a driver, you know, how respectful you are, how safe you are, how fast you are, you know, that's all in part and parcel to this. But I can recall having, you know, say for example, I have a single player race and I like overtake 5 cars at turn 2 at Spielberg. It's a big whoop, you know. It's like, are you going to advertise that to the world? You know, anybody could probably do that. But if you did something like that in a multiplayer context, it would be kind of epic, right?
It would be, as long as you didn't get caught out dive bombing on T1 and taking
right, you know, not killing, you know, not knocking everybody off the track doing it, right? Of course,
definitely.
But there is that reputation. There's that that something's at stake a little bit more with multiplayer. And I remember, like, I can recall multiplayer contests that I've taken part in, you know, that were just spectacular. Now, I know everyone likes to talk about, public lobbies, it's so dangerous. Turn 1 at Monza is a popular topic nowadays because Monza's coming out, but and how horrible that experience it is in public lobbies. But I can tell you right now, some of my best racing that I've had multiplayer context has been at Monza, believe it or not, and in Project Cars too. So
is that on public lobbies?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
wow.
and you find a guy that you don't know, and it's sort of just like you're kind of getting a feeling out for them, in the beginning of the race, and I'm a patient driver. I'm not really trying to attack as soon as I try to feel people out to see what they're at, what they're up to. If they're clearly faster than me, okay, you know, here's, you know, good luck to you. I'll see you down, you know, at the end of the race. You know, I'll let them go. I don't like to get in incidents, but if you find a guy that, you know, you feel him out and then you're like, okay, I'm going to try and overtake and see what happens, and he's respectful, it's sort of just like, okay, now we got something here, you know. And then, you know, I don't want to make it any more dangerous for him as he does it does for me. So, like, I think I had, remember one race I had with the, I think it was a Corvette C7R at Monza, and if I recall, he was driving a Ford, Ford GTE, the G40, and we were literally side by side for like two laps at the end of the race, and it was one of those things where I wanted to. You know, if I knew the guy, I remembered his, I don't remember his name now, but I remembered his name when I was playing Project Cars 2, and I always looked for him after that. I was like, I was so happy that I wanted to high five him after the race. I mean, it didn't matter who, actually, I do remember how it ended up. I had eventually overtaken him, and I think I got one of, you know, how Project Cars 2 with the bumps in the grass, I got a wheel off on a braking zone and just whoop. Around I went around, and I came in third, but I didn't like that outcome didn't matter to me. Like, it was that race that sticks out to me. Do you have any like particular races that you'll never forget, you know, driving against public lobby or league racing?
Definitely, but most of my online racing has not been public lobby. I do venture in every now and again, but rarely. Mm-hmm. I mean, that touches, you know, your experience. You just told there touches on various things. You know, you mentioned getting to know certain drivers, even in a public lobby. After a few laps, you get a feel for somebody. Are they are they sort of well, reckless might be a bit too strong, but are they, you know, are they super quick but not very careful or considerate of other people on the track? And mm-hmm. as you say, patience is absolutely key. I'm not massively quick. I mean, I'm okay, but I'm no alien. But patience pays so often. Your quick drivers do make mistakes. I mean, the best ones don't, but, you know, even the quick ones do. You bit of patience, bit of time, and you can pick these people off at a late date. And that's obviously very satisfying, beating somebody who you know is normally significantly quicker. But you've played maybe the better tactical race. Love pit stops,
yeah, play
and things like that.
The long game.
The long game, indeed, yeah.
Right.
But it, yeah, certainly individual experiences. I mean, I've had relatively recent series. We did Stock Car V8 in Automobilist 1 over AMS Unofficial. That has push to pass, so a power boost you can use so many times in a race. And it was an unusual combo. It was at Kyalami, yeah, Johannesburg Historic, or whichever name you wish to call it. And that has a cracking start-finish straight where the push-to-pass is essential for the overtake. And anyway, the guy that wins most of our seasons over Amos and Official, great driver. One of the most considerate drivers on track, and yet he combines that with impressive speed. Really, really good. But anyway, he was running a lot of success ballast because he'd been doing quite well. And on the run to the final crossing of the line to the end of the race, I had a push to pass left and was in his tow, and he didn't. Long story short, after a 50-minute race, he did beat me, but by the smallest margin ever, and I wasn't sure. I mean, literally another 10 meters and I would have won, because I had the slipstream, I had the push to pass, and I was screaming by the, you know, screaming past him or next to him.
Go, go.
But the line beat me, as it were. It was just not far enough down the track.
I can see you like lurching forward in your chair. Go, go.
Yeah. Like you're on a push bike trying to get over the top of a hill, right, you know, yeah. Lunging forward. Yeah.
Leaning like a sprinter at like the Olympics, like, yes, leaning across.
Definitely,
that's,
definitely.
That's so great. Yeah, the push of the pass on those cars is a fantastic little gem. It makes the tactical element of racing them just that much more interesting. And they're not insignificant, that push to pass. I think at the Copa Montana, it's lighter, but with the stock car V8s, man, that push to pass, you hit it, you're gonna get, I think, maybe six car lengths, at the end of a straight,
if you've got a slipstream. So it's not that effective. Obviously, the speed goes up, the the air resistance, all the rest of it goes up. So using it by itself without a slipstream, it has an effect, but not massive. But if you've got a tow behind somebody and you've got a push-to-pass available, then you know you're getting past. It doesn't really matter how strongly they defend, as long as they leave a gap somewhere on a straight.
Right. You're unless through. They're a dirty, dastardly
defender. But this is... this is again touching on what you said about learning how what drivers like. We have some very quick drivers. Some of them, this is not a saying that they're doing anything wrong, but some are more aggressive in defending and how they attack when they're overtaking and things like that. And some, some aren't. And you do learn that. And you classic ones, that they're going to go for the move here. And I tend to not defend, because if I defend, I lose too much focus and end up making balls up of it, basically. So I tend to just let the overtake happen. You got the tow, you can have it. But I'm hoping that you're going to push too hard into the corner and I'll just turn inside you and, you've got past me for 5 seconds and I'm back in the lead again. So the over and under is my favourite move, basically. Come alongside me and outbrake yourself and I'll just delay and turn in behind you. So
beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is great.
Video worthy. If it was whenever I come across that situation, it's always a great feeling to get an over under on people. It's part, like feeling proud of yourself for accomplishing it, and then also like a sort of Schadenfreude for them. It's like a mixture of like, haha, you thought you had me, but you didn't. And it's like you take the candy at the last second.
Yeah, they're rejoicing one moment and then kind of going, it didn't work the next moment. So,
definitely. But then usually if they're fast enough, they usually get you later on. So it's fun while you can keep it. But yeah, I think, finding people that are good to race with is, I think, probably one of the main reasons why people do league racing, is you get to familiarity with them, you get consistency, and you have a little fun. You can start joking around. And also, I think with league racing, we're talking about the competitiveness. Sure, that's still there. But also, there's more effort that you can put into it, And I've always found that with league racing in particular, whenever I was able to do that, effort in, effort out, you can put in more time to set up work. You can put in more time to practice. You're not at the whims of like whatever server. You just jump into a car and then you're randomly stuck in a random car on a random track with random people. I mean, just thinking about that, what it came out of my mouth sounds awful. But with league racing, it's a whole completely different experience. Like, you can actually take it seriously if you have the time to do that. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't have the time to do that. So, there's always that balance. You want to try and try to have that. And that's why it's important to have that drop race. I think that's a fantastic idea.
It is.
Drop
race. I mean, that's exactly what we're caging for. And it's my lifestyle. I was in IT, and that's kind of how we touched earlier on how do you end up becoming volunteering to run a community or whatever. Well, it used to be my job. It used to be IT running servers. So I've got the technical experience. So, put your name forward and you end up copying for lots of the work. So that's kind of how I ended up doing a lot of stuff. But my job now is shift work. So regularly I'm doing late shifts and can't race. And so that's where the drop race is essential. And that's what AMS Unofficial caters for, and it's kind of more casual championships. But we do serious ones where, there's still drop races, but where we start to apply success ballast. And if you change cars, like the GTT one, and if you didn't stick with the same car through the whole championship, you'd get a point penalty and all that sort of serious stuff.
That makes sense. There's a lot of things that you could do to equalize the playing field a little bit. I know the league that I'm involved with, Gravel Trap Legends, they had if you won the previous race, that you had to start in the back of the grid in the next one.
Oh, that's a nice idea.
So it was sort of like a reverse grid kind of system mixed in there too. But it's fantastic stuff. But let's segue that into the future plans for Automobilista 2. Now, we that the multiplayer rating system is coming out, right?
I do, yes.
Yeah, so they've been planning that for, I guess alluding to it, for about a year or more. And it's been on the roadmap back when they had a roadmap, and it's been delayed. We finally have some official word about the multiplayer rating system coming out finally on Automobilista 2 at the end of this year. So I think at the end of December transition. So we're finally going to have a rating system. So I wanted to talk a little bit about why rating systems are important, you know, and I know you do mostly league racing, but can you think of any reasons why, you know, a lot of the things that you might be interested in as a league racer would apply to a rating system and vice versa? So do you have any thoughts about the rating system, what it could be like, anything like that? Have you played any games that had rating systems that you liked or you hated?
I haven't played many games with rating systems, but we do have our own rating system we use over on the Just Race system we use to schedule our events at AMS and Official. I think the reason why Riser ended up delaying their rating system for so long is because they need to get it right. They get it right, it's going to be, I think, a big bonus for online racing, for multiplayer racing. And it's easy to get it wrong as well. I mean, I don't think it's going to be like an iRacing style system, because that's, you know, very much a closed thing where, you know, a community can't run an iRacing server. It's iRacing that run iRacing servers. So I think probably it's going to be more along the lines of a race kind of system, where, you know, maybe they do official ranked races as well as the rating that you have can then be used by communities to say, well, you can or can't join our servers because you haven't got a decent enough safety rating. So it's a tool, I think, that is going to be really useful if done right for communities to help them, you know, as hopefully AMS2 builds in popularity. It will mean that it's going to be more people on track, but also more wreckers, more idiots out there as well, just enjoy ruining people's races. So,
well, I think it's just one way for people to get more committed to what they're doing, or at least give them an incentive to be committed to what they're doing, or at least starting to develop, you know, quote unquote, a craft, as opposed to just taking everything so casually. And I think that's where we've been standing with AMS2 for quite a long time. It's just, you know, the casual one-off race where the consequences are. The only consequence I can think of for multiplayer right now is someone remembering who you are. And believe me, that is going on. Like, that is already in, you know, inside AMS2. But when you get to a point where you have 5,000 concurrent players like ACC, no one's going to remember everybody's name. Or, you know, possibly a few names here and there, but no one can really get a comprehensive picture. But if you have a number next to someone's name, even though you're not in the league where you're not racing with people over and over again, they see that number, whatever it may be or however you obtain it, and they could develop an idea of like what you are as a driver ahead of time to see, you know, how they can square up against you, you know, on track. So, for example, I personally think that Project Cars 2, the legacy rating system, is what AMS2 is going to implement. And we'll get into that in a second. But it's that, you know, that number that when I was playing Project Cars 2 that I would respect. So if I saw a guy with like a 2100 rating, you know, you can say, okay, well, he's going to be fast. And then you'll see his quality time and wow, he is fast. And then all of a sudden, like, you're on track with him and maybe he gets crashed out and then he's coming up behind you. That gives me a thought in my mind, like, I'm going to give this guy room. You know, I'm not going to try to battle him. But if there's a guy that has, you know, my rating, say it was 1700 and somebody was racing, you know, spun out, same situation, was coming up a little bit behind me, 1700 rating, I might battle him a little bit more. You know, I might change my tactics. But it's that reputation building that that's really kind of like the important thing about it. As far as the system itself, my assumption is they're going to have a driver score, which would be just like a performance type evaluation based on, just like Project Cars 2, what they did was if you placed well on your races, you know, say third podiums and things like that, and the drivers in those races had high scores, your score would go up even more. So you place well, your score would go up. If they were even, you know, the competition was really good, the score would go up even more. And I think they had also had a color code as well. Then they matched that with a safety rating, which sort of was important as well, but it's how they got about to the safety rating, which is sort of causes a little bit of controversy. And from what I understand in Project Cars 2, the safety rating was if you didn't have any offs, if you didn't hit any walls, if you didn't hit anybody else, generally speaking, clean racer, you're going to have a, you know, your safety rating is going to go up. But the problem with that system is, even if you're hit from behind at no fault to your own, say, you know, turn one Monza and you just get bowling balled just like everybody else, your safety rating is going to take a hit. So it's more important to have like a breadth of, you know, a lot of different races to finally get your score to stabilize to where it's supposed to be, as opposed to a one-off race. There's no live stewards here, you know, so it's like they can't really tell who's involved in an incident. As far as the game is concerned, you're involved in an incident. The ramifications of that are that, and at least in Project Cars 2, for their purposes, the hosts of the next lobby could set a specific driver score and a specific safety rating. And that's what you were alluding to before, where the host had some control about the quality of the, or the assumption of the quality of the driver that was going to be entering the lobby. I mean, you would assume that someone with a 1800 rating, 2000 safety score, you know, would be a good person to race against. The funny thing is, I saw a lot of people that created lobbies that didn't qualify for their own lobby. So I think in their mind they were safe, and the only reason why they were like they had a bad score was because everybody else around them wasn't safe.
I think that's an assumption that people often make. I mean,
it's always the next guy.
It's always the guy that's behind me or in front of me or next to me or whatever it might be. I mean, you wouldn't believe it, but I've actually written my own safety algorithm, safety rating algorithm.
Really?
Yeah, it's come up, and I think we're going to touch on it later, but the Just Race system that we use has a safety score. And so I got quite a good understanding of the arguments that everybody always puts to me. You mentioned them yourself. So, you know, essentially most games just count contacts, count off tracks, count the basic data right. That you can get. And they can do their best to try and say, well, if somebody hits you from behind, then we'll ignore that hit. But again, it's a very rough measure. I mean, you could brake check somebody and then get hit from behind, and that doesn't right. count, apparently. So it's, you know, with computers, as you say, without race stewards allocating the fault or the blame, it can only be a basic case of counting contacts, counting incident points, whatever you want to call it, and comparing right. them to... Well, most of them are essentially, they're a ratio of contacts or incident points to either, say, corners turned or distance or laps done or whatever it might be. So, yeah, the algorithm I wrote does all sorts of things to try and to encourage you to race cleanly. It gives you a boost at the start when you haven't turned many laps. It's more generous to you to try and get, you know, help you get a good rating. And then and every single incident that's ever happened does count towards your safety rating. But the ones that happened 2 years ago count a, you know, infinitesimally small amount. And the ones that happened recently count more. And the common complaint that we've had with this, well, not a complaint, but... people want to have an understanding of how it works, and you've really just got to think of it. It is just an indicator. You can have a bad race and your safety rating will go down, but obviously, if you're generally a clean racer, then you're generally going to have a good safety score. You have one race right. and you lose 5% or whatever the score is. Yes, it's disappointing, especially if it wasn't your fault because somebody else took you out. But it's only an indicator. It is not, you know, it's not right. It's not meant to be an individual race analysis. It's meant to be an indicator of your safety.
Yeah, and that's like cumulative statistics yeah. are going to cure it.
That's it.
And that, everyone's going to have situations where they're hit from behind.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And putting everyone in a large pool of, you know, 100 races, 1,000 races, you know, you're going to get hit from behind on X amount of times, just like that's everybody it. Else.
Yeah. But if you've got somebody with a poor safety rating who's saying he'd done 20 laps, that might just be because there's just not enough data there. Maybe they had one race where it was bad. But if you've got somebody who's turned 2,500 laps or 10,000 laps and their safety rating is pretty low, then you kind of know that, you know, that guy, for whatever reason, gets involved in a lot of contact. Now, they may not all be his fault, but if you're hitting a lot of stuff, some of it's got to be your fault. So, I mean, and that's the other thing. Again, you touched on it, is you often you don't believe it's your fault. And this is something I've learnt through many, many years of online racing, 5 or 6 years worth of online racing now, is that often, and I live stream as well, and I have to hold myself back in the race and sort of say, no, don't immediately go, oh, I've just been taken out or whatever, although I still do occasionally say it. Because you can guarantee I'll look at the replay and I'll go, oh, yeah, well, you may have pushed me round, but I didn't give him any room or whatever it might be. You know, you can guarantee that it's not always as clear cut as the guy just took me out.
Yeah. I think there's a certain percentage of incidents in multiplayer context, in league racing and in public lobbies, that it's just unavoidable. And I think that's a baseline. Say it's 5% of incidents are just completely unavoidable. There was one race I had in the Formula Ultimate recently, public lobby, AMS2, it was at Interlagos, and I think it was turn one, lap maybe, no, it was lap one. And one of the cars just flew past us and outbraked themselves and at turn one. And then they got sideways and spun out in that, you know, AstroTurf area. Mm. You know, and me and the other car are trying to negotiate that, you know, that left and right, which is kind of tricky, by the way. And then in between both of us, going full speed in that sector, in between both of us flies this other, this Ultimate goes right between us. Like, there wasn't that much space between us either. I mean, it was shockingly close. He could have taken out either one of us. And if there was a rating involved, you know, tough luck, Buster. You know what I mean? You're out. Like, yeah. And if damage is on, you're really out. But yeah, that's just luck of the draw. But then there's those, and this is one of the things I wanted to touch upon, is like how to survive, you know, in those in between gray areas. Like, and I think we have a similar kind of outlook on it. I always, you know, if I'm in the grass and it's not because of, like, you know, that Formula Ultimate example, if I'm in the grass, there's something, I usually tend to think there's something I could have done that could have prevented me from being backwards on the grass. If there's anything that I could have done to help avoid or anticipate contact or trouble, I'm usually, like most races that I get into instance like that, and from my multiplayer experience, I'm thinking about it. Like, I'm like, yep, this is what I could have done. You know, I saw him creeping over. I saw him touching the guy's quarter panel. I should have slowed up and I went left instead. And I should have went right and took the right lane or something like that to avoid the contact, or trying to anticipate, you know, how cars that are involved in contact are going to behave after contact. You know, and this happens in real life racing all the time. Like, just NASCAR is an example. Like, if you, or IndyCar, any oval racing, you know, the cars have a tendency to go up the track, right? Yeah. So, you know, passing them on the inside is probably, you know, going to be more dangerous than going down low and going underneath them, because the centripetal force is going to lead them up to the wall. So knowing how the cars are responding from a physics perspective, you know, after post contact, I should say, and trying to obviously try to figure out who the instigators are of that contact is all important to surviving. And then also, I think, just practicing with your own car. I think one of the things that people get in trouble with, especially in AMS2, if you're not, you know, putting in a decent amount of hours, say you do find a lobby and they're few and you get plugged into like in a Brazilian track you've never driven before, and you just want to do some multiplayer racing, and you've kind of not really familiar with the stock car 2019 or the stock car 2021, you know, just having that lack of practice really can cause problems. You don't know what your braking zones are, you know, and this is with people that are trying to, you know, have a clean racing. So let's move into let's dig a little bit deeper into your league management. You know, you're scheduling one-off races, you're scheduling championships. What type of time commitment? I mean, like, obviously, as the more events that you're running, your time exponentially grows. But my assumption is, like, you don't have unlimited time to just create events. You have to figure out a way to take some of that pressure off, right?
Oh, definitely. So when I started off at race department running their AMS events, we were running three, I think four a week at one point. And that was all manual registration, because obviously they have the whole premium membership thing. So people would post on a forum, say, oh, on a thread, sorry, on their forum saying, oh, I'll take part in that race. And I had to manually add them to the opening post as somebody who was going to take part. It was very much a manual process, and part of the reason why I kind of stopped, stood down from the post at race department, just the workload was incredible. And people don't realize, I mean, the regulars know how much work you put in, but I think people don't, unless you've actually done it, don't realize how much work goes into to running and scheduling and planning, preparing these races, so that hopefully you yourself get a great race, but hopefully everybody around you gets a great race as well, and then they come back and race more with your community. And that's kind of what we all want. We want a great group of people to race with that we can trust on track to be side by side with. So yeah, that time commitment is pretty huge, and one of the biggest issues is also just that scheduling. If a race is meant to run at 8 o'clock GMT, then that's when the server needs to start.
Right.
So lots of communities, or lots of sort of the techie server guys, have various scripts or scheduled tasks, whatever it might be, to make those things run to time. But yeah, after working with AMS official and realizing, well, I've done this at race department, and I stood down because it was too much work, and now I've put myself forward to do the same thing at AMS unofficial. And it's a similar level of work involved. Maybe registrations weren't there, but still all the scheduling was all there.
You had to still do the work, even, and then people might not show up.
That's the other thing, yeah.
So I know that you're also involved with JustRace.net. You're a developer there. So I know that that's a third-party tool for community managers. How did you get involved with JustRace.net, and what is it that you find particularly useful?
Well, that kind of links into what we were just talking about, because that scheduling, knowing things are going to run to time, being able to put a whole championship, 6, 8, 12, whatever the number of races are, all up there so people can see in advance, this is the calendar, these are when the races are going to run. You register or you don't register, however the community does it. It's all very, very flexible. You know, the drivers aren't required to go and register if the community doesn't want to do it that way. They can still just post passwords on their Discord or whatever it might be. But the JustRace system is a tool to help community admins manage their schedules, their events, put them all up, get that information out there. When this event's over, it takes the log files and parses them, produces ranking, which we've obviously talked about, ranks and safety ratings. And then all these figures can be used if they then want to say, well, only people with X rank or X safety score can take part in our events, then they can put those limitations on there. So completely down to the community staff themselves, how they want to do it. And then for the drivers, I guess the draw for them is much like what Ryze are trying to do with the system they're wanting to add on. The statistics, the seeing that progression. You start down here, and I'm just learning, and I'm not that good, but I'm 3 months in now, and I'm actually, my rank's going up, and I'm doing well, and I can see that my overall score is improving. That progression it keeps you coming back for more, doesn't it? Yeah, I want to be top 10 or top 100 or whatever it might be. It just keeps you coming back for more.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's sort of like bridges the gap between pure public lobby and pure league. Like, you could be a registered user, go to justrace.net, sign up, and then peruse different racing events, and just sign up.
Yeah.
And you can track your performance afterwards.
Yeah. It's down to how many communities are using the system. I mean, it's fairly early days. AMS Unofficial uses it. We don't just support sort of AMS 1 and AMS 2. I mean, I'm one of the developers at JustRace, and I'm running AMS Unofficial. So obviously, Ryzer-based games are quite a focus of the development work we've done at JustRace. But we support RF2, AC, ACC, Raceroom, pretty much everything other than sort of iRacing, Breakfast, and things like that. So, you go on there, you browse the events by community. If you just want to see AMS Unofficial's events, you could just browse our events. Or if you want to see all Automobilista events, you can do that as well. And what's on offer there, JustRace doesn't run the events. The communities are running the events. So it's not us running any events. It's completely down to the communities. The community is using it.
Right. And then for community organizers like yourself, if you could just boil it down, ballpark, how much time do you think it saves? Like, if you're scheduling two events a week, You know, how much time do you think, like 50%, you know, 20%? Like how much time are you looking to save here?
I mean, I could not schedule the events. I mean, there's a team of us. It's not just me at AMS Official. There's there's three admins and a couple of moderators, and we all work together to decide on, I mean, a lot of the work is deciding on what we're going to run in a season and how many races it's going to be and things like that. But once you've made those decisions, there's no way of that work can't be avoided. Somebody's got to make the decision on what you're running and when you're going to run it and how you're going to score it and all that sort of stuff. But once you've got that basic format ready to go, then, as I say, within I could schedule eight AMS Unofficial, we do 18 races in a season. So we run three cars three times a week, one on Monday, one on Wednesday, one on Friday. Mm-hmm. And we do that for 6 weeks, so that's 18 races I have to schedule. I can schedule 18 races in 20 minutes, and that's all 18 races for the next 6 weeks scheduled up. There's a wonderful template system, so there's loads of options and all the various dedicated servers out there. And one of the risks is that you, when you're filling in the form in the dedicated server, that you tick the wrong option and you thought you were going to do a 30-minute race and you've done a 30-lap race. It's really easy to make those human errors. But with a template, once you've got that template set up, all you need to do is probably change the car, the track, and the name of the server. If you know this is standard format for your races is there, then there's only a few tweaks and all those other settings that you might overlook or you might forget are already loaded to kind of what your community likes to run.
And you can see this in Just Race, and you can set up an entire season ahead of the season.
Yeah, yeah. If you're a community out there and you've got your own server, and if you haven't got your own server, we don't give you servers, but we can recommend who we use. We've recently added Amazon AWS server support as well. But you've got access to your own server to run the events. As I say, Just Race doesn't run the events, but if you've got the hardware to run it on, then it does the online scheduling and driver registration for the events. It makes that massively easy and straightforward, and it's just a huge time saver.
So, and then it takes away a lot of the times when you just sit down and you create the lobby, like you're clicking all of those things and clicking all the different options. You don't have to do that anymore.
No, just does it automatically. And it's a scheduling thing, because people are creatures of habit. So you've managed to get your community races all turning up at 8 o'clock on a Saturday for a race, but sometimes it's 5 past and sometimes it's 5 to, and then 1 week your internet at home goes down, so you can't remote into the server to start it off or whatever it might be, and the event doesn't happen. And it's easy to lose your regulars or maybe newcomers with one or two bad experiences, despite them having maybe lots of good experiences. So that reliability, that ability that that server's starting at 8 o'clock and it will be there for people to join, and it's going to run exactly to schedule, and at the end it's finished.
So that it frees up your time to just work on, community, involvement, culture, development, that kind of stuff. Yeah,
and publicizing your events, getting the word out there so that you get a good. I mean, if that's, nobody wants to put all that effort in to get a grid of 7 or 8 people. People want a grid of 20 plus of trusted racers out there that you can race with. I mean, it's impossible to kind of prevent all the idiots from being able to join. There's always a way around the system, but that's Just Race definitely has that as one of its part of its core, is making it so that you can hopefully build up those regular racers and reliable people, and still be open to newcomers who might come along and find your group and want to race as well.
Okay, so we've talked about this a little bit before, but you've also mentioned that this is a completely non-commercial endeavor, correct?
Yeah, yeah, we're crazy. For a little background, I'm a developer at Just Race, but I didn't found it, so I didn't start the thing off. So at AMS Unofficial, I was really struggling, like at Race Department when I stood down, really struggling to keep on top of the workload. And we were looking around, one of the other admins was looking around for something out there that might help us. And we stumbled across Just Race. It was I don't want to use a dead project, but it had gone silent. It had gone quiet. It wasn't an actively developed thing anymore. And long story short, there were two guys who were developing it, Toby and Stefan. Toby wasn't active anymore, but we got hold of Stefan and we managed to convince him, AMS Unofficial convinced him, to let us get hold of Just Race and take it where it is now. So it initially started off as just being a tool for us to make my life easier. But then we realized it's actually a great tool for lots of communities out there. And it is completely non-commercial. There's no adverts. We pay for all the servers ourselves. It's been over five, six, maybe 6 years now in development. No, we're not trying to make any money out of it. It's we're sim fans. We love sim racing. We'd love to see the system used because it's got a huge amount of time, effort, and energy in there. But even if nobody uses it, it's still a massive advantage for me at AMS Unofficial. But you know, it's there. It's a great tool, and we'd love communities to use it and take advantage of it.
That sounds amazing. There's nothing more intriguing to me than working with people that, you know, have just pure love of the sport or, you know, the esport, as opposed to, you know, some type of commercial enterprise where they're always trying to, you know, microtransaction you to death. But this conversation didn't obviously come out of the blue. So we've been in discussions about, you know, Steelcast having a potential race series. I don't know anything about community development. I actually was talking to a friend of yours, Davix, and, you know, when he came up with the idea that AMSU could partner with Steelcast and present the possibility of having a Steelcast racing league, I was intrigued. So you've been helping put this together for me. So what do you got for me?
Yeah, we're going to be doing the M1 Pro Car, something that one of the cars I really enjoy. I think you've done a setup video on that, and I know it's one of the cars you
That's correct.
Enjoy as well. I think we are going to go with Hockenheim. It's obviously your choice rather than mine, but I think that's the plan.
Yeah, that's what we talked about, Hockenheim 77 M1 Pro Car.
30-minute practice, 15-minute quali, and a 15-lap race. Which is about 35 minutes. And that is actually pretty much a replica of a real 1979, I think, event. 1979 M1 Pro Car real event.
That's right.
We're not going to go with the real weather. Keep it nice and easy for people. it should be a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, I'm definitely going to be there. And I want to invite everybody listening here that you're all welcome to join it as well. Information will be provided in the description below. But before I let you go, I wanted to thank you, Jim, for joining us today. It's been great having you on here. And I wanted to thank you publicly for all of the help that you've done providing all the effort for setting up this racing series, the Thunderbolt Racing Series. We will be using Just Race. So thanks again, Jim.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm sure it's going to be a good success. Looking forward to it. And conveniently, you haven't clashed with our AMS Unofficial races, which means I can attend on a Sunday as well. So I should be there as well.
Awesome. So long as your schedule provides it, I'd love to see you.
It's down to wife permission.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Okay. Yeah, of course. That's always a factor. Okay, for all of you out there, thank you for listening. More episodes to come. Oz will be back for next time. And hopefully when you hear from us again, the monthly update will have come through. So we'll have much to talk about. If you appreciate the podcast and have the means to support us, please explore any of the options available to you in the YouTube description, links, or other clickety clicks. It would be very much appreciated. Again, you're all welcome to join the Thunderbolt Racing Series. Space is limited, so just visit justrace.net, register, find the event, and sign up. It's as simple as that. In the meantime, thanks for watching, and take care.